right, this is going to be another episode of Counterpoints. And I actually feel like there's an obvious perfect segue from the last episode, Maniac, because as we pointed out, if you are Mouse, you literally had to make a minimum the final at this tournament when that bracket was drawn. And quite frankly, I actually even think winning it like now also, even though I would demand it because you were going to be playing like a FaZe or a Vitality, some of that, maybe even Astralis who's on a heater. But in my opinion, like, this was almost like the minimum requirement for Mouse precisely because of this context, Maniac. Which is, they are the new Heroic. Like, they haven't yet figured it out in the big stage matches. Like, if you put them in a major right now, you don't care what their form is. You just know that it's not going to be the same form that turns up in the game, and they're going to go through rough periods in the match. So to me, it's like, I don't want to discredit this result, because actually, by the way, here's a little bit of a base take people probably wouldn't expect me to have. Normally, I would say I despise tournaments without like a really big stage component, because I actually think that is part of Counter-Strike. But here's the thing, especially as we're moving next year to having way more tournaments, I am fine with there being the odd tournament like this that's almost like a studio LAN, as it were, because the upside is it shows you stuff like this. It shows you that if you are someone like Mouse, it's why I'd say they are like the new TSM from 2015. There's clearly nothing wrong with their game, mate. Their game is fantastic. And if they don't have insane pressure, they've shown you now they can beat everyone. They can beat... That's why the joke is in that major run. Like, I think when they look back at that bracket, that'll be one of those ones you look back at, like, how did any... We could have beaten all these teams, mate. Like, again, maybe we would have lost in the final, but like, we went out in the first round. So, like, mad props to them for winning because it shows the potential, which I find really exciting. But... this also, in a way, infers Maniac. Like, why are they doing this at the other tournaments? You know what I mean?
Of course, of course. No. Listen, I'm right there with you with the assessment of what happened to Mouse. When, you know, during EPL, we did like the power rankings. We did like a power ranking during the group stage, and then we did a power ranking during the playoffs. And I had Mouse number one. Any of these segments, I had Mouse number one. So what I said on Broadcast then was that anything but a grand final would be a failure from them. And then... what happened to the grand final, I think, speaks more about the absolute catastrophe that Vitality was. But when it comes to Mousesport, I feel like it's not like they have reached something that I hadn't seen yet. It was just, they came in here as the reigning champion in Malta. They won the previous season. They destroyed Na'Vi with Simple the previous season. And now they get to destroy Vitality with Zywoo. Very impressive. And obviously, we're going to talk a lot about this grand final because there's a lot to unpack. And I'm going to try my very best to separate, on one hand, how poorly Vitality played, how poorly Zywoo played, and all the problems attached to it, and on the other, what Mouse did great, because they deserve that win. Like, it's not like they just played average Counter-Strike and then Vitality happened to have a bad day and they just won. No, I think Mouse played very close to a perfect grand final. Like, incredible starts, very strong game plans, individuals feeling super confident, making moves, Zershan was lights out. Like, all of these elements we can list and we can talk about them later happened for Mouse. They deserve that victory, like champions, and no one can debate it. But this hasn't shown me something about Mouse that I hadn't seen before. So golf clap, a bit of excitement. Let's bring that level to a different context. And then this is when you guys reach that next step. Because within that context, holy fuck, do they play good Counter-Strike.
No, I mean, yeah, the major positive I would start with is, this is why they weren't overhyped. Like, I used to think when the lineup had, like, I think it was before they got Yimpat. Before Yimpat, I always thought Mouse was overrated because they could do similar things in a group stage. But first of all, it didn't look as clean. Like, obviously, didn't have as many good players. And then they would fall apart in ways that were just more obvious even in the game back then. I mean, obviously, they didn't have Shuhi the whole time. Torji was super raw. They were working with people like JDC back in the day. They had a very different lineup. People are forgetting that. But this era, when they got Shuhi and Yimpat, like, they actually have every tournament pretty much in the parts that are the least important cooked. Like, this is the team right now, for real, where you would just bet your life they make it through a Swiss system or group stage, mate. Like, if it's they can't lose, right? And I think people are even forgetting this, Maniac. This was the team that right after Katowice just went, oh, high spirit, just fucking sent a warm 2-0. Like, at the fucking RMR, people forget that result completely, mate. Like, essentially, the only team they haven't been able to beat is FaZe, for whatever weird reason, just because FaZe always had it over. But they've now beaten Vitality as well. Like, the hype is this. Now, I said on past episodes, like, they're still young enough. I don't say, like, you've essentially, like, you're a failed choker team. You're obviously in that territory, but you're still early on in it at this point in time. By the way, even though it's an overstressed point, I will say, I do think there is some value that they now have Zipnix as a coach in that sense. Because one thing Zipnik's revealed in my interview series I'm releasing at the moment is, unlike some of the others, mate, he totally admits that TSM used to choke back in the day and that they obviously had some problems and that people were in denial of it and that being in denial, you know, pushes it further back and you have to deal with it later. So actually, if anything, at least he has the experience to understand what some people might be going through. Because I have to say, now that you have won this event, though, and you have 3-0'd Vitality, like, guys, Vitality is like a top 3 to 4 team in the world. Like, if you're going to 3-0 them on LAN, I have to actually now start saying it's no longer good to just make a playoff. Now I want to see like a real LAN trophy. In fact, you know what? Here's one that people probably haven't thought about. Why shouldn't this team be considered a true team that could win the fucking Shanghai Major? What, they should. For my money, you look at some of the other paper, squads out there.
Yeah, yeah.
That should be a real expectation. Never mind last one, we made the play. No, guys, like winning the tournament should be for real now. Like there's not even many steps left. So that gets me pretty hyped.
The only problem is that I had the same point of view after Pro League season 18, and it didn't really transpire, right? They didn't win automatically after season 18 at the end of CSGO. They still made a bunch of grand finals, but they lost to FaZe all the time. But I think, like, logically speaking, the way this is supposed to happen is that as they grow together as a collective, and a very young collective at that, if you think that Brolin is supposed to be like the veteran of that team, then that tells you a lot about like the profiles in that team. The idea, the hypothesis is that they're supposed to grow as a group and as a collective, and they're supposed to use these victories, the likes of the 3-0 Vitality, as kind of a safe in which they keep all of the things they've done right in that game, and then they're trying to apply that in a different context. And I know on paper it sounds very, very simple. It's not that easy, but I've always had the feeling that Mouse was one tremendous win away from always being like a contender for titles wherever they go. But it is still a theory that this Mouse we've seen here is going to show up exactly the same in Cologne. Right? Cologne is not that far away, and that's going to be an immensely important event, super pressurized, in LANXESS, thousands and thousands of people watching. It's not that far away. You could even make the case on a power ranking that Mouse right now might be number one. If you just take like your finger to the pulse of all the teams in Counter-Strike, who knows? Like, you actually, in a snapshot of time, you could say right now, they're the most informed group, they have a lot of energy, positives vibe, they're winning, they just destroyed Vitality. Now, you show up in Cologne, if that doesn't happen, then where does that leave us? I think sometimes the step in the transition that we want to see from them can take a long time. And I particularly think that Xertion is a huge point of conversation within that context, because if he somehow can channel the confidence and the success he's had during that grand final into a different context, this is going to be a game changer for Miles. Because if you remember the game versus G2 at the Major, Xertion has a horrible game, absolute tragedy of a game on an individual level. And I really think that he's like the barometer of how Mouse feel, because they have a couple players that I believe are relatively stable. I think Yimpa is incredibly safe, barring some bad maps here and there, but overall very, very safe. I think Shuhi's calling is not going to suffer from pressure. I've never seen Mouse just throw away calls. But then I really think that wherever Xertion lands is a huge impactful factor for them. And I hope he takes that victory as a blueprint. Like, this is how I felt. This is what I did up to the game. This is how I envisioned the game. This is how I felt during the game. This is how I handled the good and the bad. The only caveat to this grand final win for Mouse is that I rewatched the VOD. They've had incredible starts on all of the maps. They never played with their backs against the wall on any of the map. Like, whatever they put to the table, all of the first half were tremendously in their favor. 9-3 first half on Inferno, 9-3 first half on Mirage, 10-2 first half on Nuke. This is what you call a Counter-Strike player's paradise. Whatever you're putting first is working. You got all the freedom in the world. You got wind in your sail and you're rocking people. That, for me, that's the only caveat. But at the same time, they earned it. Like, it's not like someone gave them rounds out of nowhere. No. The way they approached the beginning of the games were fantastic, but they never had their backs against the wall at no point in this grand final, if you ask me.
I mean, that is usually the obvious way it goes, though, when you are the team that's like the chokers. Because if you remember, that was also what like old TSM was like. They were amazing frontrunners. If they just all got ahead and they had all skilled fraggers, they'd just batter you. Then there wouldn't be any reason to feel nervous, right? There'd be no moment where the pressure hit you. So I agree with that. Like, the difference is, You would even to this day take FaZe from like a difficult, like, you know, fucking tough scenario where they're down and everything's going against them. The other star players go, we haven't seen that from Mouse yet, but I will say they have the luxury. They don't really need it that much, Maniac. Because the thing that I find crazy still about Mouse is I thought it was just going to be a few events where like all the fragging maintained. It's just maintained, guys. Like the joke of it all is the name value is what's fucking the Mouse narrative up. Like, first of all, when people see the name Mouse and it doesn't have, say, Carrigan or Nico in the lineup, their brain doesn't let them think that can be a champion. That's supposed to be like, oh, you know, it's like a cool little underdog. And it's like, it really isn't. If you look at it, this is actually one of the best GM'd rosters in all of World Counter-Strike. Like, the joke right now is, as we'll get to in a minute, right? After the end of last year, everyone said Vitality had like a super team, guys, of like all the best fraggers. And now every Vitality fan is trying to get everyone except Zebu like cut from the team. Like, that's what losing a Mouse does to you. Because I'll tell you what, when you have the fraggers, they do, guys. It's fucking, but like the joke is, everyone makes this big narrative because Frozen left and Brolin joined. Like, Brolin isn't even vaguely their best player, guys. What are you talking about? Like,
I know.
He's found his place again and he can have maps where he goes. But he isn't like the star player from Fnatic back in the day, but they don't need him to be. Like, they have, like, as you say, Exertion, when he frags like that, like, this is like prime Yekindar. At least, I mean, he didn't get that much chance to do it on land, but like what was blowing people's minds was MVP. It's like the impact that will have on your T side is bonkers. Like, the problem is you have to imagine what it's like to play a CT professionally, guys. Like, if you're in scenarios where you just get like 2-1 bulleted to the head when you're holding a site, but you did everything right, you had the angle set up right, you combed it right, the other guy had the counter flag. There's no answer to that. It's like in certain sports, there's a great saying they always say in basketball, they say better offense beats better defense, as in like theoretically, the best offensive player would still beat the best defensive player because on some level, the best defensive player has to react, doesn't he? I know Counter-Strike's a little bit different because you have things like Peeker's advantage, etc. But I think, yeah, obviously Exertion is like the barometer of the team because if he goes off, I don't know if there's many teams can beat
and
the squad.
He's got something unique in that roster. Like, the word I've used to describe him a couple times is like he's a creative. Like, you know, there are a few players out there who create stuff out of situations, who like cross smokes or smell timings, take risks, go for multi-kills. Like, he is that. And the downside of that, let's just say it's a double-edged sword, is that, yes, sometimes it looks foolish because it doesn't work out and you can have really hard games. That comes with the territory. And I think this is why this Mouse team is so interesting, because they have excellent players in different substrats of Counter-Strike. Like, Jimpa and Zershan are as opposite as you could possibly have on, like, how would you describe a player and what are their qualities and what are their strengths and whatnot. They're like on the polar opposite, but they're both very excellent at what they do. Jimpa, it's actually bonkers to think Jimpa is the highest rated player for this roster of 2024. Sure. And he's an anchor. Like, this is literally, this used to be, the storyline used to be, oh, you know, anchors, they don't really see a lot of people, you know, and maybe Rops broke that sort of curtain and that was it. No, Jimpa is like an anchor that is incredibly fragging, that is clutch player towards late around. Those don't make mistakes. And then on the opposite of that, you have Zershan, who tries and take risks and dares and goes for crazy moves. Like, for Shui, he's got so many different pieces to play off of. And I maintain that his calling, and I mean, people said I overhyped him at the very beginning, but I thought what he did in Gamer Legion and early in Mouse, I thought he was already positioning himself to be like one day a next Kerrigan. Like, that's how I felt he was calling, the way he was aggressive in the calls, like what he did to Vitality. And it would be nice if we could ever like get an in-depth interview with some of them to see if he's got a whole lot of suggestions coming out of other players. But the way he maintained pressure on Vitality with the calls, that's like incredibly impressive. And even I, as a fan of Vitality or friends of some of the players, I could do nothing but clap my hands. Like, yeah, this is textbook. This is textbook what you're doing. You're playing with the advantage. You're keeping the pressure. You're changing the timings. You're reading them. You're calling rotations. You're gambling rotations ahead of time because you have the score for you. These are all assets of great IGLs. And I think he's continuing to build his legacy for someone that is already that young. That's very impressive.
The only thing is, I have no downside to Shui. I do think he's good. I personally do think they should have fired Huxley ages ago and just given this guy the shot. It was the obvious player to take a chance on, in the same way as they took an insane chance on Modesty, who'd never even played, because the idea was you knew if it worked out, then you have this guy for like the next 5 years and maybe like defines your whole generation. So I don't have any downside to him, but I will say I'm not going to give him like fucking full credit for all this roster. Like, first of all, Exertion was mega before he even came here. Back when they had JDC and fucking Dexter, Exertion was popping off. So he, and also, as you say, like Yekindar, he is clearly coming up with a lot of like entry approaches himself. There's no way that's like a call from Spawn or something. Like, that would be insanity. Like, Counter-Strike hasn't been played that way in about 15 years. And then also, on the Yimpat one, he's not doing any of that stuff in the fucking post-plan scenarios, guys. That's just the genius of Yimpat. Like, that actually implies to me that the real question should be, what the fuck were all the other teams in Europe doing ignoring the Yimpat guy? Remember, he has no special reason he has to be in Maus. Like, he's not some player that has, you know, like, it's like it's a German team and he's German, like... What were all the other teams doing? What were all the Gamer Legions and the Ensers and the fucking Apexes? What were you guys doing? Well, this guy was out there because this guy's skilled. Like, you watch him play, like, the first tournament and he's amazing. Like, he's just got like, the Zipnik's quality where you just know he's going to win all the clutches. He's never... He's always poised when he's under firefight against some better player, but it's in a late round scenario. So, to me, like, I'll just say, like, those things would hold whether they had Chewy or not. But I do think it's obvious that, like... There's no downside. Because the other thing I think is this. Let's talk a bit about like the final now, because obviously there's a lot we can talk about with Vitality. I think one factor people aren't taking into account is this. Right, guys, how are you going to flame the same Vitality that beat fucking Astralis and FaZe like they're shit and act like Maus must suck or something, that they like win over them? Meanwhile, it's like when you look at the Maus squad, as I've said earlier, unless pressure gets to them, their firepower is crazy and their map pool's pretty good. Like, mate, there's so many factors there that automatically make your team have a harder time playing against them. Like I even alluded to earlier in the year, it's only like the last big match where they get bombed out of a tournament where they ever look bad. Aside from that, they look great all the time. That's one of the reasons why now I feel like it's justified to start putting some fire to their feet, as it were, and saying like, it's not good enough anymore to just be really good. Like, we know you're really good. Like, actually fucking become the best, become champions. Yep. So let's talk a bit about the final then, because I do feel like there was way too much overemphasis on like Vitality in this final, mate. Remember, right before the final, it was all like, literally, you would have seen this, every graphic was like, is Zewu about to break the record for the greatest LAN ever had by anyone? Well, how are you going to do that and then just make out like the team shit because they lost the final? Like, by your own logic, guys, why should he need to have like a top three performance all time to win the LAN? Like, you're already implying you think something's wrong with Vitality right there. So give me your thoughts then, Maniac. Because obviously the main problem here is this. It's one thing to lose, but it's another thing to get blown out 3-0. No, you know, that's the biggest problem about this final for me.
100%. And as I said earlier, the preamble is that there's a lot to unpack. Like, there's a tremendous amount to unpack from this grand final. And I mean, I don't think we're going to do it linearly. We're just going to travel around and see bounce back from points. The first thing that come to mind was that the performance that Zywoo had against FaZe and Astralis were masking profound issues that were already then in the playoffs. That's the first thing. And if you listen to the cast, that's the first thing I said, because I was on the cast for the map one of the grand final. And we were looking at the stat. There was like a stat page, a graphics came out of Zywoo's number until this point. I was just like, yeah, guys, this is great. But now you got to realize, if this doesn't happen, I don't know how the other members of the team are going to react when this isn't happening. And I think it's a very vicious, and it's not even that they are consciously thinking about that, but there's a part of you when you have your superstar next to you, and it's something that I experienced a couple times with Kenny S back in the days, when you have your superstar that is literally carrying you and destroying everyone all the time, and that isn't happening suddenly, then you're left thinking like, oh, what the shit? What the hell is going on? Like, why are we not getting these easy rounds? So that's the first thing, is that I think when Vitality rolled up in the grand final, we were reveling in what Zywoo did up until that point, and I think it's rightful, and I did that too. But a part of the story that was missed is, A, would have Vitality even been in that position if it wasn't for stratospheric numbers against FaZe and Astralis? Because if you look at the stats from these two series, it actually is like completely ridiculous. The difference between he and the second one is just, it shouldn't even be reasonable. So that's the first feeling that I had.
I mean, especially the Astralis one, they probably just get 2-0 if he just plays even
100%. Yeah, I mean, even if it gets FaZe, can you imagine he had 2.21 rating in that best of three? Like, that's just, I don't even know. I don't even know what to tell you. And I was happy to watch it, but there is no way in any world this is replicable. Like, even Donk in the best of five final of Katowice had 1.9. It wasn't even Chennai. So it's just, it was great when it happened. It was a great moment to witness for the history of Counter-Strike. All great. But again, I don't see a world in which this is actually replicable. Now, let's just dive straight into Zywoo, because this is something that I had a lot of thinking about, rewatching him play, trying to figure out what the fuck was going on in this grand final. And I am mentally doing the exercise of, I'm not allowing myself to be lazy and just pinpoint other members of the Vitality team who didn't do what they needed to do and then use that as an excuse. Like, I'm not doing any of that. We can talk about them later down the road, and there's things to be said. I think I'm starting to pinpoint what is currently differentiating a top level Zywoo and a top level Simple. I think I'm holding on to something. What Zywoo doesn't have right now, that Simple always had, is the ability to go against what his team wants to do when his team is fucking up. And this simple sentence encapsulates what I think is the main issue for Zywoo. Because I was watching him at the grand final, and barring over three maps, maybe three or four missed shots or him being a little bit less sharp, I don't actually think he sucked. Like, I don't think he sucked in this game. I was watching him play, but it was more about like the positions he was finding himself in that were most of the times ridiculous, if not completely idiotic for like the setup that's happening in the server. And I'm thinking, why? How do you end up there? Like, how do you end up in this position that you are now? Obviously, Vitality was just like the Titanic that just hit the iceberg. And you could see that after six or seven rounds, they were already in freefall mode, like full panic, agitated, reactive calls, always behind, no trade, bad aiming. The whole thing was here. The whole salad was a catastrophe. But Simple would go against the call if he thought individually there's something different that has to happen in order to win. And I feel like Zywoo is probably trying to keep up with the plan that is currently the plan of the team, even if that plan is shit, which in my opinion was a lot of the time in this grand final. A lot of the time, Vitality were completely off the mark in the rotations they needed to do, the way they needed to play the clutches, they were completely off as far as I'm concerned. Why? I can't ask why, but I don't think he's yet capable of breaking through that mold at this very point in time. I think this is what I'm feeling. This is what comes across when I'm watching this grand final.
This is where I actually think people misunderstand that whole discussion we had about Dexter and what it means to be toxic. Because I can tell you, Maniac, I've actually gone, like I did with Alexi Mew, the micromanaging thing. And I just did what I can do as a journalist. I just went and asked a bunch of his former teammates. Now, unsurprisingly, I don't have the connections, I don't particularly know them, to ask like the Russian ones. I was mainly asking people in like OG and teams like that, obviously, that he's played with, and people who were coaches of him and stuff. And by the way, they all say it's nonsense. They say like they actually have no idea what that narrative is. They it either comes out of the Russian teams or it's people misunderstanding basically that he like has his own ideas, just what you've just described there about how the AWPer should play, and that since he had like poor English, he just wasn't great at expressing himself essentially, which by the way, you could probably infer means like maybe he raged once or twice, but put it this way, when they tell you privately off the record like this en masse, like, that's usually where people don't particularly lie, if you know what I mean. Like, in that scenario, their name's never going to be on record with it. And if anything, if someone's actually a dickhead, I can tell you, behind the scenes, that's where they do tell you, because they want someone to know, and they don't want to just be the one who had the burden of knowing this guy was an arsehole. So the reason I bring that up is because one thing I think people have misunderstood the whole time with great players in Counter-Strike is, this is something, by the way, that coaches fucking hate, because I call it superstar theory. They don't want to believe it's real, Maniac. What they believe is all Counter-Strike is a team game. It's like a mixture of like Battlefield chess, and you're sort of doing team movements. And you know what? Because here's the problem. The average coach isn't going to have Zywoo or Simple or Nico or some prime player. What they're going to have is like what Mouse has, like some pretty good players, or like one or two good players and one like good. And because you've got normal players, you're going to use all the traditional orthodox methods that work in Counter-Strike. Like, for example, the things you coach your team on, if you have a normal team, is like, always trade frag. 2-on-1 means you get the kill eventually. Then you take the CT's defense away. Then you get the bomb down. Then you hold, you know, they're going to coach like floor chart Counter-Strike, because that's actually the best way to coach most people and to get them to be more than the sum of their parts by working together. But the problem is this. The superstars, and you notice, Maniac, I never give anyone superstar status till they're really fucking good. Like, I don't even give it to, like, the Ekindars of the world when they pop off. Like, I need to see it a whole bunch. I need to see it in playoffs. I need to see it in bad games like this. And this is why I actually think an essential component of being a superstar is you are such an outlier to all the normal rules of Counter-Strike, like even team concepts sometimes, that as you're saying, there are moments, and obviously the Simples of the world can go too far the other way sometimes, where you have to actually say, I'm sorry, this is fucked up, but I'm the only one who can make this call because I'm the only one who knows what I can do right now. What we're doing isn't working. And if I do what we're going to do, look, you wouldn't say it in these words, we're going to lose this round. So basically, like, sort of hold on to your ass. I'm just going to go do something and you just have to deal with it. And by the way, if we lose, it's going to look really fucking bad and you're all going to call me selfish. But I'll tell you what, we might also win a game that we'll never win otherwise. Because there's a great quote from Michael Jordan back in the day, right, where the guy who was, a lot of people don't know this, it isn't just that Michael Jordan had an amazing coach called Phil Jackson, who was sort of like a spiritual guy and he understood psychology. There also, a detail people don't know is, the assistant coach of the Chicago Bulls was a guy who invented the offense that Michael Jordan's team used. And basically, because he invented this offense, it's the same concept, Maniac. It's all about passing and finding the open man and traditional basketball. And that guy hated Michael Jordan and hated Kobe Bryant later because his whole shit was like, bro, I've designed like the best system and you're just breaking the system to do your shot. And so he once said to Michael Jordan when he was leaving the floor after some like scrimmage game, not even like a real game, some scrimmage, he just said something like, hey, Michael, there's no I in team. And Jordan just said, there is in win, and just walked off the court. And the point there, if you get that point, is we're not saying to Zewu, do it every game. That actually would ruin the team. And it would, by the way, potentially make you a selfish player that gets your numbers, but no one else gets there. You can go too far with it. But I agree with you. That was always the reason I also had a problem putting Zewu at the simple status. Because, mate, if I even start mentioning some games to you, your brain will immediately remember Simple doing this. Like, remember when he used to play at the end with Zeus and Edward? Bro, he had to just freelance anytime he wanted. Like, I saw rounds where he would entry, he would lurk the next round. The most famous was in the online era. Remember in the online era on Nuke, when he would just essentially play the entire CT side of the map wherever he wanted because he was just so good. He was like, you know what? If I make the fight them versus me with an AWP every time, we can win all these fights. And it worked. Like, it actually was working even when that was like a scoffed Na'Vi before they had bit, etc. So I do think that is the area where Zewu, I've always made this point. The reason why coaches hate my superstar theory is because they spend all their time getting players who think they're superstars, maybe the Ekinders of the world, to not play like that because they're like, bro, if you do that, you aren't good enough to do it. Only like three people can do that, basically. But the problem is this. I actually think when you coach the whole team the same way, the mistake is you're going to tell someone like Zewu, it's good that you don't take proactive action like that. It's good that you never disagree with Apex or the coach. It's good that you always just do what the team says. And think of all those slogans, you know, win as a team, lose as a team. You know, it's no one's fault. We all like did this shit. No, in this scenario, this is the weird angle. It's the opposite dynamic, Maniac. Zewu isn't actually being unselfish by not doing this. He's actually in a fucked up way being selfish. I know I'll sound weird, but what I mean by is this. The unselfish thing to do for real is to look down your line and go, I mean, Messi can't do what I'm about to do. So we're not the same player. We can't all just play by the same rules at all times of every map. Apex can't even know what I'm going to do right now. He's not the same player as me. In fact, no one can. So actually, sometimes, to be unselfish, I have to know I am the best player on this team. And sometimes in a game like that final, by the way, we're not going to win anyway. So the only chance we've got pretty much is you've got to let me freelance a little bit, you know? Like, I've got to go crazy because I'm with you. I've always thought that's actually why Simple even... I've always said this, Maniac. I never thought Simple actually choked those like major finals he lost. I used to think he did the opposite. He tried to do too much. He would just try and break it constantly. He had the opposite issue, you know. But this is why I'm framing it very carefully against Simple's career. Because I'm not trying to make it sound like he perfected it and you can just do what he did. I think Zewu's problem is he's the most unselfish superstar ever.
I'll go one step further in that whole analysis because there's a couple things. The first one is I know from within, from my contact in there, that he is enticed by the Vitality staff and the coach and the leader and all to do more of that, like to be selfish. To be that's a fact.
I know they mentioned it many times in interviews,
No, exactly. It is actually like they are trying to get him to do that more, right? So I think it's like from an organizational standpoint, they're aware that it's something that is more necessary at least. But where the indictment comes from, as far as I'm concerned, is that when you see Vitality and particularly Zaibu having a good game, he does some of that selfish, whatever the fuck was that type plays. He does that.
Sure.
He done it against FaZe. He done it against Astralis, where he basically double entries and then disregards the rules, go for the third one, then plays a clutch like a madman. He can do it. Like, he can break from what is supposed to be textbook pure CS in order to assert his dominance and destroy a round. He can do it. What I'm feeling right now is that he might not be mentally strong enough to withstand his team crumbling next to him. I think this is where the problem is. And I'm not saying it's going to be like that his whole career. I think it's something that you can outgrow. It's something that you can work on if you're aware. But this is where I think there was always a core difference between Simple and Zywoo. So yeah, Simple used to rage, but I don't think Simple felt overwhelmed by how bad people next to him were at any point. If anything, that was maybe just a given for him because of who he played with in his upbringing as well, in his flip side of Hellraiser.
No, if people don't know, I'll even tell you, Maniac, that's one thing that was very misunderstood about Simple. When he would rage in the game or afterwards make a stupid comment in an interview, that was actually his way of putting it on the shelf and forgetting about it. He never did internally say those people should be kicked, by the way. He would just sort of go, okay, they fucked up now, but I forgive them, on to the next game. So right. I think you've got something there, yeah.
Exactly. So I think this is where... this is one of the most unspoken truth about Zywoo, because on a pure Counter-Strike level, I will never bulge from the fact that I do think he will be the greatest of all time. From a pure Counter-Strike level, and I'm just talking about a mouse and a keyboard and what's happening in the server. I'm not going to move from that position quite yet. But I do think in terms of mentality and resilience, I think he isn't on a Simple level quite yet. It's just the way I see it. I see him being more impacted by the tragedy that's happening around him. And this is where, for now, it's just a Pandora box we're not opening. But again, the whole team in the grand final crumbled and there is multiple angles to attack it. But I will say, I have no defense for what I have seen from Zywoo, because with that type of level should come attached the fact that you can deal with whatever is around you and you will still put your best foot forward. And I just don't think he's there quite yet. That's the one area where I believe there is a need for improvement, and I am not exactly sure how to go about that. It's probably going to take some time, some mental coaching, psychologist, whatever the hell is needed, introspection, whatever you need to do. But I do think he has to be way more equipped to deal with the chaos. And I mean chaos in a negative way. I'm not talking about excitement and high comms and having fun. No, I'm talking about chaos as in nobody is playing the game the way it's supposed to be. So every communication is wrong. So every decision is wrong. So every round goes to shit. I'm talking about that chaos in which Simple, because we always use Simple as a sort of a comparison point here, where he could still thrive. I don't want Zywoo to get rid of all of the other attributes he's got. I don't want him to become Simple. Not at all. I just think in this one area, works need to be done, because this might also be one of the reasons why he hasn't been able to put that kind of performance in a Cologne grand final or a Katowice, whatever. Because I still think he is too impacted by the catastrophe that is surrounding him in these moments. So it's a double indictment. It's on him and it's on the Vitality team. I'm not saying it's all up to them. It's definitely not only up to him, because fuck, if Zywoo tomorrow was in FaZe Clan, he would probably win every single tournament.
Oh, sure.
For the rest of Counter-Strike.
By the way, I would even say this. Here's one thing people don't realize. He doesn't have to carry every game, like I said, and set the record. Isn't he allowed to carry the fucking quarters in the semi and then someone else carry the final and then he gets to win? Like, normal player. Even Simple's done that before. He's had the odd foul. He didn't just mega carry. So I do think that part's unfair. That's why, to me, it was never Zywoo sucked. That's why they lost. If anything, Zywoo having his problems is just more magnified because of the stats race he was on. But there's so much in the other side of the team. I've got a couple of angles for you here. This is where I actually feel like, this will sound counterintuitive, but I actually feel like winning those first two blasts right out the gate with those new lineups actually might have fucked Vitality, because I think it gave them a really unrealistic set of expectations of who they are as a team. Because if you actually look at this squad, here's one of those times where you make a prediction and the actual outcome isn't what you predicted, but the reasoning you gave was good. So when I did those shows that I do on this Last Free Nation network, Hot Take Point Made with Kassad and Maui, obviously the whole interesting thing about that show, it's actually why I invented the format, is you're not trying to make the hot take an actual garbage take. You're trying to make it so it's plausible, but then you sort of extended the trajectory as far as you can. So I'll give you an example. When they signed Wonderful to Na'Vi, it wasn't I just said they'll be better. I was they'll win one of the first two events. I'm trying to make it what would the best case scenario be, right? I actually had a bunch of takes when they signed each of these players in order, Flames, then fucking Messi. My takes were, I actually don't know if this Vitality will be the best team, because to me, what people are ignoring here is two things. One, what made you just win that last major and Rio and have that little era at the end of CSGO where you looked really strong? Remember, they could have won that blast right afterwards as well. They were the top team in the world. They were really strong. Mm. Was you had a totally different core of players. You had Megaskin Dupree. You had fucking Zonic as your coach, right? You don't have any of these things in the new Vitality. So already it's a different team. You can't rely on anything you had from back then. Like Apex, Spix and Zebu, that's sort of a core, but is it really? You know what I mean? Like you look at the roles they're playing. I don't know too much about that. Like, so then the other factor as well is the two players you brought in, Mezzi and Flames, right? Guys, it's not like anyone before they joined Vitality was like, they must be in Vitality. These two players are so insanely good that if they miss you, like, no, in, like, remember, these are players for real that were in teams like OG and fucking the Bad Fnatic. Like, these were players, like, look, they were the best players in their teams. But even then, no one was like, this guy's like actually a top five player in the world, but he just needs to be on like Vitality or FaZe. No one ever said that. The difference is, you know this, everyone did call for Frozen to be in FaZe for years and years. Everyone did want certain players to get that step up. Actually, Spix is a better example. Spix did look in NSYNC, he should be in a team like this. Yeah. So my problem here is, I do think people have taken those two players, Mezzi and Flames, and because initially it went so well with them, and then that totally new Vitality, which remember, doesn't even have Zonic anymore. It's got X-Star back again from fucking years before. I think people have ignored how many variables have changed. So to me, I look at Vitality now, especially this year when they haven't got any wins, I look at them as a very different team. Like, look, you still have Zebu, so on paper you can be the best team. I think Apex is still pretty good. Your map pool's pretty strong even in the current meta. Like, there's plenty of reasons you could be number one, but you're not a lock anymore. And I think, unfortunately, I do feel like Vitality fans and Zebu fans, Maniac, think they should win every tournament, and that like those first blasts are what like a normal Vitality would look. Like, yeah, I know.
And I think it is fair. It was.
It's pretty competitive CS right now, mate. There's a lot of fucking good teams at the top.
I don't think it was counterintuitive, but it was, after all, surprising that they won all of these trophies straight when Mezzi joined. It was wasn't wild. Supposed to be like that. It was supposed to be a downgrade from Majisk, and there were supposed to be some waves, and then eventually, and then everything clicked, and that just worked out. So the names you mentioned, we can just take them one at a time. Mezzi obviously still struggles to have a floor high enough that he isn't a liability. And that is a reality, which is, you look at the numbers of the grand final, you don't need to have like a deep analysis of what happened. Like, there's just, the pure output is way too low. And he's got maps, and I think it still is map dependent, where he feels a bit more comfortable, and he's got clutching abilities, I would say. Like, he's got that,
for that, yeah.
The 1v2 against Astralis on Inferno is one that literally probably puts Vitality in the W situation, even though Zaiwu had a million kills. So every now and then he's got like something that appears, something that happens that makes you think, oh, hold on a second, like he's got more in a tank. But the problem is, consistently, I think the floor is too low and it becomes a liability.
Sure.
Again, if I'm going to do an actual anchor versus anchor analysis of the grand final, I'm telling you, on one hand is Jinpei, the other one is Mezzi. Need I go any further? Like, it's just the comparison and differential is too strong. So the floor is too low for Mezzi, and now he's been in that team for a little while. So I think we're probably reaching the point where it's time to think of other solutions. I mean, what do you want to do is win. And I personally think when you have Zaiwu in your team, all you want to do is win.
Sure.
Like, nothing else should be acceptable. So if you're Vitality, I think it's time to question. I mean, I put Jinpei in Vitality in a lot of tweets out there. I know he's not going to leave Miles. I think he's very happy in Miles right now. But can you imagine what kind of team it would be if he wasn't that roster? Anywho, that's for Mezzi. For Flames, I do think he is more inconsistent than what meets the eye, because whenever he's got a good team, or whenever he's got a good game, and this is usually the syndrome where we get, like, from a perception biases, we get so impressed when he's got a good map. Like, everybody remembers good Flames map. Like the Vertigo in Copenhagen where he goes crazy, the Major, the first map of the Grand Final, crazy at all. Like, you remember these maps, like they stick with you and you're like, oh shit, like, yeah, Flames. Yeah, he's got a hard carry factor. Like, his entries are incredible. The truth is, it's not that consistent. And none of that output came through in the Grand Final. Like, the aim was shaky. He wasn't sharp at all. The entries didn't come through. So you already have two players that are problematic. And now the last angle, which to me might be the most hurtful one. I'm starting to see a pattern in Spinx missing the mark in the last games of these LAN events as well. It's starting to happen. For someone that is supposed to be the fifth best player in the world last year.
Yeah.
The fifth best player. Basically, the electronic to the simple. That's exactly who he was supposed to be in 2023. If you look at the series he's had in the losing moments of all of these events, the Pro League one, the one in Copenhagen at the Major, the one in Katowice, in none of these games is he really delivering like the fifth best player in the world. And that's it's annoying because throughout the rest of the tournament, I really think he's starting to get like a good consistency. His numbers are great. If you just like look top level, he's got 1.20 rating something last 3 months, which is very, very good. It's super honorable. Like his output is there. But damn, like in when you're going to have a player like that that goes just decent and regular in a series at the end, like, bro, how is Vitality supposed to win? Like the factors are just stacking up. The limiting factors are stacking up to the point where it becomes just disbalanced. And that, I think all of that came through. If anything, I was going to mention out there, I think Sphinx was probably one few bright lights of the grand final. Like he had a few moments. I don't think he's the one that I would indict immediately in the grand final here, although obviously way below his numbers throughout the group stage, but he didn't disappear. But yeah, it was like, fucking hell. And that's not even talking about Apex's frustration. And do you remember how Vitality used to look like when they brought in the Danes the first time around, when it was Magisk and Dupree the first time? It was very discombobulated. Like, it took them a long time to figure out the Counter-Strike they wanted to play. Apex was very agitated, very frustrated. The calls were very, rushed. I felt like the calls were rushed. They were playing under pressure. I saw this Vitality again in Pro League, like making rushed decisions, being all frantic and agitated. It's like, holy hell, how are you supposed to win a grand final when all of this is coming together? This is just too much. And definitely Zywo wasn't able to outweigh all of the issues that I just mentioned.
That's one of the reasons I also reference that, like, to me, you have to look at the players in the team and how different it is from the old Vitality that won the CSGO Major. Because when you look at this squad, a lot of what does win this team games is fragging. Like, it is that Zywoo's the best player in the server. That happens most of the time. Sphinx, like, as you say, in most tournaments. Here's what's funny. He is one of the players who definitely does get to hide behind his overall rating from a year, from an event. Because as you say, he will mega destroy the bad teams and the medium ones. But I agree. There's been a lot of, like, big finals and semis where it's not even like he was, again, it wasn't like he was bad, but he just didn't carry. He wasn't the guy that you thought would, because I agree with you. On paper, when he is voted number 5 player of the year, and then you have Zywoo, who's like fucking the number 1 player of the year, bro, if I have number 1 and number 5, I'm supposed to just win everything. Like, we talk about that, should be like an era right there. Like, it's fucking, it's game over, right? So I think that's a valid point. And then I agree on the other ones, which is the things that they bring to the team, Mezzi and Flames, are quite obvious if you're an old school fan. Like, for example, Mezzi always was, even from when he was picked up in Cloud9, really good in clutches. And you saw early on, especially when he was just joining the team, you would see him win the clutch, and you're like, fuck, this is exactly what this team needs. Like, you know, you weren't going to get that from, like, Dupree or something like that at this point in his career. Like, yeah, this is awesome. If he just wins the odd clutch, you have the others carry, you don't need much more. But I agree, his fragging just isn't up to par in this team. It's why I said earlier, I get the Flames one, sort of, because the difference with Flames is, obviously, you're mainly thinking of him on the T side, because he's super streaky, has really nice aim, and the joke is, when I've found out by talking to people, apparently his personality is just like his game is, mate. He's a guy that's always, like, joking, constantly. He's like the ADHD kid who's had too much sunny day, you know. It's always like doing this and doing that and talking. Well, that's even how he plays. He just plays like fucking 100 miles an hour. But when it works, like you say, I mean, the best example ever, everyone remembers that old clip on OG when he was on Mirage. He ran into the B site and he just like headshot someone here, there, and then like on the window or something. And it looked like, what the fuck? Is this guy cheating or something? It looked like an aimbot, right? When he does that, you think you do the same thing you do with the other players. You think he's a better player than he is. But what you forget is, mate, Messi and Flames are hella inexperienced. What are we talking about? Like, these guys haven't won championships before. The only time they've won are these fucking first two are right out the gate with Vitality, where they were literally playing with the best player in the world. Like, I think people have misunderstood that, like, just like we were talking about Mouse earlier, we're not dissing any of their skills. We're sort of saying their mentality and their experience level has to catch up. And when it can get to that level, then in theory, like TSM, when they became strong, wouldn't they just win everything? Like, this team, that Mouse team could run the table if they got over their shit at this next major. That could be it, right? But the problem I have is, this is where when you kick people out of teams, or if you're a Vitality fan, I'll just say the obvious one is this. If you're anyone who thought, like, yeah, actually, you know, maybe we don't need Magisk, like, haha, enjoy Falcons, idiot. You don't know Counter-Strike, mate. People like Magisk, like, fucking, they're like forged in the fires of Mount Doom. They just fucking can handle that pressure, mate. In fact, they're the ones who themselves in the pressure moment are like, you know what, I'm going to break up the system a second and go for this kill here that I need to get, because otherwise the flow of the round's going, we're just going to lose. Like, I think that's an underrated aspect, Maniac, because when you start to look at this team, bro, they've got Apex, who's mega experienced. Zywoo's pretty experienced because he's been at the top this many years now. Sphinx is like, I mean, sort of halfway there. Flames is barely even registered on the meter. And then Messi had that one IM Rio run at the playoffs where they got there inexplicably and just lost immediately. That's about it. Like, it's actually, that's why I say people are really underestimating. When the team was Zemu, Apex, Dupree, Magus, I don't need to put Spinks in there, and then Zonic as my coach. Bro, the point there is the reason I can always have confidence is we should win eventually. We've got people that can do it, and I've already done it. We just have to get to the right headspace together. I think the challenge right now, and I'm going to flip this onto the guy we haven't mentioned, is fucking Ekstaz. Everyone wanted to tell me this guy's a genius, right? I will notice, and this always makes me a bit worried. It's a bit like Floppy. You notice how all the people who tell you he's brilliant are literally friends of his in real life or former teammates. It's like, bro, that's called a biased audience. Like, let me hear it from, like, you know, his opponents or, you know, someone who hated him and kicked him out with it. Tell me, that guy tell me he's brilliant, and then I'll be more interested. So similarly, when everyone told me Ekstaz is a genius, that was with the French lineups. That was when he was speaking in French to people culturally French. He even brought some of those players through on the team. This squad, by the way, there's only fucking two French people. And we know, like, in theory, like, he's not the reason Zemu's awesome. And Apex was there even when he wasn't there, was winning. So if you're Ekstaz, mate, it's time to start earning that fucking salary. Like, you're going to have to actually figure out with players who haven't won and not on the biggest level, how to get them to that level. That's really hard. Like, I don't put that as, like, an easy task. In theory, your job as a coach is just, you know, design what we're doing and set the price. But there's something missing on this squad that is a bit alarming because it's been too many tournaments now, Maniac. It was one thing when it was just kind of Vita. And even then, you're like, well, the Ents just overperform. Or you go, well, the Major, well, what could you do against that FaZe clan? It's like, mate, it's too many times now. You know what I mean?
No,
like,
now you know
there's some like final element missing that would bring together Vitality. I don't know what it is, but I'm waiting to see.
I agree with you. I mean, that depends what you want from the Vitality, but I do think there's no way around the fact that both the Heroic series in Katowice, the third map of FaZe game in Copenhagen, and now this grand final against Mouse, months apart, were all plagued by some degree of crumbling or the team falling apart. Like, that has happened over months. And that's also after having won at the end of 2023. So it's not like you could just say, you know, they still don't know how to win. So that's off the back of victories. So I think there's already enough to worry for Vitality. And I am concerned that this is starting to get to them as well, because you know how you can basically learn to be helpless. Like, there is such a thing as learned helplessness, where you start having this self-fulfilling prophecy that, shit's hitting the fan, we're going to get all tense, and all the rounds are we losing. And then I worry that this is starting to happen for Vitality because of how quickly they turned into this chaotic mode against Mouse. I was actually surprised because I thought after the FaZe game and the Astralis game, that should have filled them with, like, the confidence that things are going to be fine and all. I didn't see any of that. Now, to bounce back on the Ekstaz point, the disclaimer here is that I know him personally, so I probably cannot be objective as much as I would like to be, because I do think he's a very clever guy. But I will say that not every team, and this is going to sound controversial, but it's not, not every team needs a clever coach to win.
Sure.
Different teams have different needs, and different coaches fit to different teams, depending on what is it they need, what do they bring to the table. I don't know that Robben was an incredible mastermind of Counter-Strike to teach Kerrigan the ways of the calling, but he was filling something that they needed, and it was working perfectly. And when he left, you could feel that more than anything. And now they've warmed up to Neo, and it's working again. I don't know that Ekstaz has the profile that is currently needed to make this bunch actually win and overcome whatever problem they're having. And I'm mostly talking about the emotional and the psychological side of it, because there are obvious issues embedded in the Counter-Strike when we talk about levels and experience of Messi and Flames. Yeah, of course, that you can work on that. But I don't think this is the reason why a 0-3 happened in the grand final against Mouse. I think there are deeper issues that need to be discussed. I don't know if Ekstaz is the one to do that. I don't know if someone else would be in a bit better position to do that. Maybe someone with a stronger personality. I'm not exactly sure. I just think that the criticism, or at least the questioning, is not warranted. I think it's a fair point to ask the question. Is he what they need to win? But I do think we're starting, throughout this conversation, now we're starting to feel like there's different points that start or that need to be fixed. And this is where it gets really complicated as a team to just, like, try and do the whack-a-mole.
By the way, we're fixing this now. It's why at the end, I actually sort of don't blame specifically one player, except Mezzi's just the obvious person you could replace, right? The real thing I come to the conclusion about with this team is, to be fair, I just did the same thing to Mouse. That's why I said they haven't won yet, is They haven't got veterans, mate. Like, look, I understand. Like, here's the problem. It's when they did the Mezzi and the Flames signing. When they did just the Flames signing, I can do that whole angle of like, yeah, but he's like young. You're going to have him for years. He'll develop that. That's great. But at the end of the day, where is the Rain that's just going to have like a half when I need him to have it? You know, it's a mega veteran. Mm. Where is the like super clutch player who's going to play right in the right moment? That's the thing about someone like Fierce. Fierce can even be in bad form, but they have that, like, it's almost like they have the echo of what it's like to be on top and win, and somehow they can just banish from their mind all these like forced helplessness that you're talking about. They don't get into like a doomer mindset, like, fuck, mm-hmm. it's good. And also, I think the thing that's mad underrated in that team is, if you've ever noticed, one of the reasons why you will never, ever, almost not even jokingly, mate, see the other Flames players, the stars of the team, ever like deride Rain or Carrigan, is because they know that, like, mate, that's actually part of where their confidence is sourced from, right? People like Rops know they're supposed to be like the best rifler in the world, right? But the reason it works as well is because, you know, people like Carrigan's going to always do that entry style no matter how he's playing in the game. Even if he's literally 1-15, he's still going to go in. You know, Rain's going to just get like a duel that he wins, even though he's like fucking 15 years older than the guy on the other side of the crosshair. Like, those things, even though you're the star player, give you extra confidence as well, because it makes you feel, unlike Ziwu, like, you don't have to be like the best player ever to win this match. You can just be a normal human too sometimes, and if you're having a bad game, you know what, maybe Rain does win two opening duels on Mirage that kept you back in the game, and then suddenly you're back on a gun and you get a 3k and it's all cool again. Meanwhile, the difference in this analogy is, imagine you have a game, you don't have to imagine, it just happened, where, yeah, you know what, Spinks is getting some kills, Ziwu has the odd kill but plays a bit safe, Flames doesn't get those crazy entries, Mezzi loses every duel, Apex is mega frustrated. Like, at that point in time, what reason would anyone, if you paused and did a timeout and said, right guys, how are we feeling, what reason would anyone have to go, I think we're still going to win? Like, because I agree with you, you could see on map one they sort of knew, like, well, yeah, got out the wrong side of bed today, guess we're losing. Like, I actually had that vibe. That's why when they were down, here's the other thing as well, mate, even though, yeah, there's no crowd and all that, when you're down 0-2, that's where I find it really hard, even though people are going to say, well, FaZe lost the spirit, 0-3. Like, yeah, but look how hard a game they gave them on that fucking Mirage game, guys. Like, they didn't want to get fucking swept. They were going hard. I bet their shit even was just, let's get one map. You know what? Fuck this. Let's get one game off these guys. Vitality looked beaten after the first two maps completely, man. Like, they were just ready to go home at that point in time.
Yeah, I agree. I think contextually, each first half or every first half of every map just broke them. And that is massively concerning. It's massively concerning that a good half can break you.
Oh, and it is, yeah.
This is where we circle back to complimenting and praising Mouse, because I do think Mouse played close to perfection. Like, the amount of highlights they had, the Torji 4K with the USP exertions clutch on Nuke. Like, there are moments. That's why I said at the very beginning of this episode, I'm not just going to shit on Vitality and take away from Mouse. Absolutely not. It was the sort of the encounter of these circumstances coming together, with Miles having incredible moments early on in halves, individuals popping off, great calls and all. But the beauty of a game like that is supposed to be, okay, 9-3 scoreline. Now, hold on a minute. Vitality is going to win the pistol round. They're going to convert the round, and suddenly we have a game. Like, it's happening again. The same way FaZe would do to anybody that gives them a 9-3 lead early on. If you know, if they win the next pistol round, holy fuck, they're back. That's it. Like, all of the protocols, they just immediately align. Everybody starts playing a little bit better. Oh, that's it. They're back in line. It's never happened to Vitality. Maybe you could make the argument that on the first map, there was a little bit of glimmer that came through the second half. Like, a few rounds started to happen. Vitality started to get into the rhythm. And then, obviously, they didn't have enough leeway to come back into it. Like, you could technically make this argument. But then when you move on to Mirage and Nuke, it just felt like, I was watching the second half and I felt like they were going to lose. And this is never a good sign. Like, I'm generally ready to give them a fighting chance and all. Second half, I was just like, yeah, that's it. So that in itself is an issue. And I don't pretend to know how they're going to go about fixing it. But there is no escaping it. As it is right now, they do not seem to be mentally strong enough to withstand a beating like that and still win a game. They can win when they roll. They can win when Ziwu rolls. Yeah, for sure. Like, they had incredible games at the Pro League. But if you give them a hard time, feels like they're very much vulnerable.
And also, just to see them lose like that on Nuke, like, Nuke is their fucking home map, guys. Like, that's the team. Map, no one wants to play these fucking guys on. Like, they're supposed to win that against anyone, pretty much. So that was alarming in itself. I'll tell you what I'm going to ask you. I'm going to ask you a tough question then. So as of right now, I mean, we're assuming there probably isn't going to be a roster change in Vitality. I'm guessing they probably stick with this lineup and at least do the next major cycle, would be my guess, right? Mm. If this team exists as it exists now in a world of FaZe Clan, Astralis, maybe Mouse, Spirit, the other teams that are out there, Virtus Pro's got a new life. There's all these like burgeoning rosters that are all potentially ready to go crazy or already really good. Will Vitality win the next major? Can they win the next major? Thoughts?
As it currently is, I don't believe so. I mean, as it currently is, I don't believe so. I think if I was to say yes to that question, then the premise would be either that Zywoo is going to go fucking spend 1 week in a desert with like a shaman and like fix and just basically becoming like a robot of like a mental resilience never seen before. And I would have a guarantee that every single game would have 70 to 80% of his level, to which I would probably be ready to say, well, yeah, I mean, we've had it on paper. We've had the blueprint of Zywoo at peak level beats pretty much anybody that is in the game currently. But that's a really strong premise, which I'm not counting on currently. And the other premise would be that either Mezzi or Flames can bring more consistency to their game, either a higher floor for Mezzi or more consistency for Flames. And look, I'm not going to disparage their working or practicing method and how it is they use their time between now and the Shanghai Major. I don't know how effective they're going to be. But I do think it would be wishful thinking of me to tell you right now, oh, no, don't worry about it. Like, Vitality is going to be much better in Shanghai. It's going to be great. Like, all of these things are going to get fixed. They're going to steamroll everybody. No. No, I don't think I can make that statement right now. Not after Katowice into the third map of FaZe into this Mouse game. I think there's enough leg to the theory of doom when it comes to Vitality and their position at the major run. But I mean, Cologne is going to be pretty soon, and that's already going to be a massive test, because we know famously this is an arena in which it's been strugglesome for them to come through. So I'm already setting my sight on Cologne and see how they behave in what is inevitably going to be a very pressureful environment, very intense environment with a lot of teams that's going to come in hungry. The Astralis, the Spirit, the Mouse, the FaZe, all of these teams are going to come hungry as hell to play Counter-Strike to beat everybody. Let's see how Vitality are playing over there. That's already a test that I'm looking forward to.
I'll tell you the team, actually, on some level, not totally, but on some level, almost more than Mouse, that I want to get to a Cologne and just put them on that stage. It's fucking Astralis, mate. Because low-key, this is actually, like, now one of my favourite teams to watch. Like, this team's really fucking good. Like, I don't think people understand. It's not just things like nobody had expectations, would Device even be obliged? That shit's all great. The real thing that's crazy about this is, like, this might be one of the it's either the most insane honeymoon period ever, or this team for real, Maniac, is, like, actually top three. Like, this team looks really fucking good. Like, oh, so many things work. Even when they lose, they don't even get embarrassed. Like, they lose off minor things, and to who? The absolute best teams in the world. And I'll tell you what, if they play those best teams in just a group, they'll beat them. Like, this team actually, I can't even underhype them. Like, it's just, like I say, get them to the stage, though. Put them on a Cologne semi-final, then let me see, because I want to believe so badly. You know that famous poster of the UFO that says, I want to believe? That's me with this Astralis team, mate. Like, I actually was hating on the construction of it. I thought King Blame F was fucked up, because I think they only did it because they paid Stown so much money and he's come over to be the new star and all that jazz. But in spite of the fact all the narratives didn't make sense, it has worked out beyond belief. Like, I can't even imagine how it could be better, mate.
No, I'm right there with you. And it's funny that you make this transition from Vitality to Astralis, because I do think they have something that Vitality don't, which is they have an incredibly high floor individually speaking. And I always hype the freak out of Stare and Bro, like the value that it brings. And sometimes I have a complicated view of Counter-Strike. I have a very systemic approach of how I look at a team and like how one role doing their job really, really well frees up someone else to do their job really, really well. And it's like when everything is working, if you are, let's just say if you are the rotation, I'm going to make a very easy example for people to understand. If you are the catwalk player on the CT side of Mirage and your B anchor, if he's getting 0.5 kills or 2 kills, the situation in which you're going to rotate to is vastly different. If he actually gets 2 kills before he dies, there's a very high chance your position is going to be way more favorable to take good fights, as opposed to he's getting just blown out the water immediately and then the pacing and the spacing from the opponent is right in your face. That's a very concrete example. But this is a little bit how I think about Counter-Strike. Like everybody doing their job allows someone else to do their job better. And sure, there are players in superstar roles who have greater performances, more magnitude to it. And so it should be. The same way strikers fucking strike goals and then defenders are defending. That's fine. I have no problem with that. But I do think that Astralis right now is showcasing what Yabby and Staun can do when they have solid fundamentals around them that protects them from like silly situations and silly rounds lost. Just look at how they were playing. Look at how Yabby and Staun are performing now compared to the Blame of Time. It's night and day. It is absolutely night and day. And I even talked to Yabby on the couch in Pro Day and I said, hey, you know what's happening to you? This is crazy. This is great to watch. And he struggled to explain why. Like, yeah, it might be a little bit of a system. I have my roles and like, you know, the atmosphere is better and we have great players around. But I personally do think that Stare and Bro are doing an incredible job stabilizing this team and like being beacons of safety. And then Yabby and Staun are fucking wrecking. And then, yeah, Device unbelievably hasn't really skipped a beat, even though now he has to be a leader and still fragging. So yeah, I'm very excited about Astralis and I think they're going to be serious candidates for Cologne.
And even though the one angle everyone was so sure of is like, well, there's no way Device can still be like the best player and have MVP numbers. Like, again, look, I'm still going to put like I'll put a tiny little chance. This could still be a honeymoon period. Maybe the next tournament, like half as good, or they have a down period, or there's one map they're questionable on. But right now, it looks like he absolutely can do all that shit and IGL. Now, I will say, I do think that's also why I want to see him on the big stage. I'll tell you what, the difference between being like the best AWPer in the server and fragging out and IGLing under pressure in a massive match, which is obviously a different component entirely. But in terms of just the average game he plays, he's doing it. He's making it work, guys. It's why, look, I did say, even though I didn't think this would work, if there's anyone in history could make it work, it'd surely be Device. Like, he is like probably the smartest AWPer ever. He is a guy where he's done both styles. If people don't know, he's played in the loosest systems of the Carrigans of the world. He's played in the superstructured system of Glaive and Zonic. Then he was even with the Blame F. I mean, essentially, he's fragged everywhere he's gone. Obviously, no one knew how would it work out IGL-wise. But even then, by the way, I'll say this. Bro, look how much work he has clearly put in as IGL. This guy's clearly looked up loads of smokes and fucking watched demos and tried to figure out counters and stuff. Like, it's clear that he didn't just walk in. And even though people wondered if this was the case, if he was sort of told, like, well, would you like to be IGL? Like people say Blame F was. This actually looks like he does want to do it. Like, he actually is embracing it. Because, you know, that's always the problem when an Apex or something switches to IGL, is you don't want it to be like the Yekindar one where it's like, oh, bro, are you just going to quit this in 3 months if this goes badly and your game sucks? It's not, and even if we're winning, it's not fun for you anymore because you're not fragging people. The difference is Device actually, and I thought before it was just PR maniac. I actually believe it now. I really believe that unless something goes drastically wrong, he will just be in IGL for the next like 3 years and he's just going to embrace this role and be the most unique. I mean, here's the real joke of it all. If you think about it, I will say, considering everyone, you know how everyone now loves to laugh at Falcons because they're doing badly and it's a bit of Schadenfreude, right? Everyone forgets you were all laughing at this Astralis team when they first made the team at the beginning of this year. Everyone was loving them failing. Well, I'll tell you what, even though I didn't agree with it at the time, even though they could never know this is the team they'd end up on, it's going to look a bit different laughing at Stabby when fucking it turns out they managed to upgrade Cadian.
Yep.
Like, bro, we don't know yet if he's good on IGL, but he's pretty good. And I'll tell you what, he's a way better fragger. Like, that's insane. That's not, if there's one thing I would have told you could never do, is upgrade him. Like, he was him and Jim were the best AWPer IGLs. They just were. They had that niche card up. But even then, you didn't expect him to carry. This guy does carry. Like, this team, that's why you're right. The firepower also just crazy here. The thing underestimating in CS2 is, CS2 is way more of a fragging game. And so you see the teams that have these bonkers rosters, they're just so hard to beat, mate. Like, this isn't like 2 years ago where you have like the plucky underdogs, like, you know, you have like one player who's so good and you grind out, you don't grind out wins like that. They just blow you up the server, mate. Like, they win 13-8 over you, you know what I mean? So I feel like they also have, like, because of the fragging, they have the capability where they're going to be in every match they play. That's why I'm so excited. Like, I'm actually so ready to get mega hyped.
I mean, you say Device has 3 more years. I feel like he's got an infinite amount of years if he's actually somewhat decent as an IGL fragging wise, and then with the experience and the vision of the game he's got, like, he's just extended his career for 5 years if he wants to. That's the feeling that I had when he moved on to IGL, if he was to encounter any success, which seemingly is happening. I also think something that is maybe a little bit underrated is that it feels like Device has found a way to tap into Stone's calling potential, which arguably wasn't the case in the Blamef era of Astralis. One of the first things Device said on interview is like, holy shit, this Stone guy is super clever with the way he wants to play Counter-Strike. Like, he's got so many great ideas. He's got such good read of the games. Like, and a team is never going to be as strong as when the relationship between a leader and what I would label a co-leader, I know it's a bit of a antiquated sort of notion, but like having someone that's really strong in a calling, like if that relationship is working and they want to play the same CS and they understand each other, I feel like this enables Storm to be the player he is supposed to be the player we wanted him to be this whole time in Astralis. And now he basically has a what is seemingly a green or a get out of jail free card from Device, where it's, listen, bro, you do you. Like, I give you the space. I give you the moments. You can have it. You can take them. And Device is also capable of having a couple plays that are set around him. But I don't think he's got any problem being more of a support role in a few like scenarios that are happening on the survey. I don't think he's got any problem with that. Like, if he can enable someone else and be like a security operator, second line of defense while the play is happening, he's cool with that, which means all of the like the aggressive, assertive resources are used for Yabby and for Stone. And on the T side, they have a great day. They love it. They're the one being put on display. Go ahead, kid. Do what you got to do. We're going to set you up. We're going to put together a strategy. You get to have your move you want, the pathway you want to have. And the Device is right behind. I think this triangle of Yabby, Stone, Device is really working well. And definitely the work has been put in. And the strat book is strong. The calls are pretty aggressive as well and daring. Like the way it's like called three times a rush A on Ancients. Like, okay, it takes a particular idea about a game to call three rush A in a row. This is not just a 101, this is how I want to play Counter-Strike. So fair play to Device. Fair play to Device to what's happening now. Let's see it on a big stage as well.
I also think, by the way, the Stone angle is very shrewd in the sense that it's actually the reason why I think... I think it was fucking Blade who said this. If you remember, there was an interview around the time of the Major, I think it was before the Major had finished, where Blade said something like that he wanted Immer to be the second voice on Na'Vi. Now, what's funny is I actually reached out to Immer, because I actually know him, and said, like, were you the secondary caller in Gamer League or something? Is this why they're referencing that? And he basically told me, oh, no, not at all. But what I took the premise there to be is this maniac is, think about where Stone was when Blame F was benched from the team. It's the same thing. You have a player that you thought was really good on a team that you weren't on, and now he's on your team and he's not even vaguely as good. In fact, he's not anywhere close. Well, one of the first things I actually think a shrewd coach or in-game leader is going to try is, let's have him be more involved in the plan. Maybe we're not doing the things that make sense for him and how he reads the game and how he flows in the game and what he wants to do on his role. And the difference is, the Immer one, I think's more of like, it's the last chance. Like, let's just do this. And if it doesn't work, we can just kick him with good conscience. The Stone one is like, guys, we just signed like a top 10 player on HLTV for millions of dollars. Like, there's no point not using him. Like, we're not just going to go, hey, like all those fans that were actually for real after that super team failed saying like, they should kick fucking Stone out the team. It's like, there's zero chance at any level you'd ever do that. So to me, I think it's a way shrewder move than people give them credit for. Because as you say, the second they did this move, he has just become activated in a way he hasn't been. And maybe ever. Like, I don't even know that on Hiroki played like this. For me, he was a little bit more of a baity player sometimes on Hiroki, and he just won off his skills and sort of, I felt like he was always comfortable with the PC and around because he had great role players. But I think actually this might be the best Stone we've ever seen. Looks fucking mega right now.
Yeah, possibly. And what is actually relatively scary for anyone facing Astralis is that bar the honeymoon concept, I don't really see a reason why the level would drop. Like, when I watch them play, it's not like people are putting together moves that make no sense.
No, it's not fluky, right? It looks legit.
No,
yeah.
Exactly. It looks like it looks very sound in how they approach the game, and most of the strategies they execute make sense, and the trades are where they're supposed to be. And then, yeah, sure, you have exceptional individuals. It's not like anybody standard could do what they're doing. Sure, the entering skills for Yabby is incredible. The game sense and playmaking from Stone is great. Yeah, but these are attributes that I can rely on somewhat reasonably, like what Yabby did in Heroic, what Stone did in Heroic, the player that Device is, what Stair always did in Astralis, what Bro did in Monty. I can rely on that. And the tape is here. Like, we have the receipt. We know how good they can play. So since it looks like seemingly this bunch played the Counter-Strike that they want to play as a core and as a group, holy shit, like, why would Astralis ever not be in a playoff from this point on? Why would they not be in a playoff? Who would not put them in the top eight of any tournament they go to at this currently stand? I think it would be ludicrous.
No, by the way, they also earn that mouse status. It's like, before the playoffs, I'm taking this team to beat almost everyone, mate. Like, they're just too good. And especially in those no-pressure matches. Right, I've got a question for you. So obviously, on the topic of the aforementioned benched Blame F, it was announced he has joined Fnatic, right? Now, I will say, I did a Substack piece where I was like, five teams that improve if they pick Fnatic. If they pick up Blame F. Spoiler, I did put Fnatic there, but they were bottom of the list because they were like 34th in the rankings or something. So at that point in time, I just want to make it clear, I didn't want Blame F to go to Fnatic. Like, he is overqualified to be on that team. In fact, if you look at their team, the only reason why Crims is staying is because he's a legend. Aside from Crims, you could cut every player on this team and I don't give a shit. In fact, I'm even going to make that the basis of my point about Blame F joining this team. I actually think, even though I think it sucks if you're Blame F, I think if you are Blame F, there really is a world where someone like a G2 should have considered maybe gambling on this, and this could be the move that gets them back to the top, gives them more fragging. Like I even said, for me, someone like an Ents, I'd consider that move, you know. These are all places I'd consider, because I'm looking at teams that, you know, they make the one move and maybe it puts them back in contention. The problem with the Fnatic move is this. No matter how Blame F frags, this team isn't going to like playoffs of tournaments and shit. Come on, like, it's just not plausible, because I actually think some of these players are fairly weak, and I was kind of underwhelmed by the construction of this Fnatic roster. It looks very shoddy to me, and actually a lot of the players aren't even players that are hyped. These aren't the names that like are out there, because the problem Fnatic has right now is this maniac. Every team's a fucking European mixed team at this point in time, so at this point you're not even getting the top talents. Like, the joke is Mouse gets those players before you. Fucking other squads do get those players. I mean, those players join, I mean, here's the joke, those players do join Vitality now. They don't go to your team. So the problem for your Fnatic is, it's great for you, because I think the good thing about Blame F is this. In this team, I don't even want to hear anything about him being solved. He should do whatever it takes for Blame F to be the best Blame F can be in this team, because I think he is almost guaranteed fragging. So I love that angle, but I'm looking at it more like this. I don't expect them out of the gate to be a good team. But I do think, right, if Crims can somewhat, again, be the veteran, if Blame F can frag, you've at least got like the pieces to rebuild. You aren't there, even vaguely there yet. Like, I think the Afro guy is a bit of a fucking overrated AWPer personally. I was never a huge fan. But okay, I'll maybe give Body credit. He's took a few years now to transition over to this new role. Like, there's pieces there, but to me, what you do is you let Blame F get settled in, let him start fragging out, putting up his numbers. If he does that, you're going to have the odd match, he'll do an upset. And then what you do is you use that as the magnet to draw another player in. Because now the difference is, if in 3 months from now, you can bring in a top player, I mean, you can't do it now, but imagine you'd have gotten a Dexter in 3 months from now. You know what? If you can get another talent and start to go, you can get like your config. These players are out there. It's not like there's nobody. But I have to say, this move doesn't move the dial much for me, mate. It's a great one. Like, I like the idea. I think Blame F will almost certainly frag out, but I don't think it will in any way make Fnatic a good team. Come on.
So the first thing is, I think the only real winner of that move is your Fnatic org.
Oh, of course.
I think it's the only winner. Like, that is kind of a snatch if you consider where they're at in the realm of Counter-Strike and their position in the hierarchy. The fact that they can get a fragger like Blame F, fair play. You know what? Fair play to you. And if I was in a decision-making position in Fnatic and I could make that move happen, I would probably do it. I don't see what would be the counterindication of that. But that is about the only positive I have on very, very short term. I think this is extremely telling about the lack of credit that the rest of the very top scene gives to Blame F. Because you would think that someone with that kind of output would have people rushing at his door to be like, come on, I'm going to give you like a star rifle position. Like, we all saw what you could do on the server. Your fragging is incredible. Come on in. It would appear that did not happen. It would appear all of the teams that you talked about, the G2s, the Vitality, fuck the Mouse, I was even looking down this, but Falcons, whoever, like all of these teams, actually, I'm cool. I'm cool. You go ahead in Fnatic and you have 30 kills. I don't want any of that. So that, I feel like, is a very strong reality check for Blame F. One, I am personally surprised. I don't know what is the outlook that he has amongst the other top players. I don't know about that. I know the community has labeled him like a baiter, like selfish players and every now and then. From a pure Counter-Strike standpoint, I always thought people were too harsh on him and I thought he had a greater output than what people were saying. But fuck, this is like a statement from the Elite community. That's not even just the fans. Like, it's just the Elite community is not exactly interested in having him bolster any roster that is above Fnatic. And that's pretty crazy. That caught me off guard. When I saw the announcement, I thought, holy shit, this... I imagined he would have to work his way back up, but I didn't think, and sorry guys from Fnatic, I didn't think he would have to go so low to start again. I didn't think he would have to go at such a low level to bounce back at the top level. I had no idea about that. So I join you in the analysis. I think the narrative is now, if you're Fnatic, down the road, this might use as a magnet to get higher profile players for you to rebuild something. better players. Hey, who knows? I don't know. Maybe one day Glaive wants to be an IGL. Maybe he can join now this Fnatic roster instead of being in Ents or wherever the fuck is happening over there. He comes in and now you have Glaive, you have Blamef as a core leader, you have Crims, who you know what can do as a sort of a supportive, like anchoring role. And then you're only looking for like a good entry fragger and a very strong rifle. Like things could potentially click and they could start building towards something else. But on short term, this is not a win for Blamef at all. In fact, this has to be more like a stepping stone. Okay, we're going to take the long road ahead. We're going to be humble about it. We're going to rebuild and we're going to try to lift ourselves back up to the top. And I just didn't think he would have to go back down the list as far as he went down there. That surprised me a little bit.
It's why the only one concern I have is, I'm not actually that worried, but it's just you have to factor it in, is if this will like be a bomber for him. If like essentially it's like you just Sisyphus pushing the rock up the hill every time, and either you just don't play as well because your team's way worse, you're like, fuck, what's going on in my career? Or you frag, but then it just doesn't matter. I've got a question for you, Maniac. Since you played during the era when Device was coming up in TSM and Dignitas, and then eventually they became Astralis, but even then it was a couple of years before they won the title, and then obviously they go to Astralis all the way into 2018. So we're talking like you can go back like 4 or 5 years before that, when it was your teams in Titan and LDLC and all that. When you first used to play against Device in those teams, Media, I want to get what your take is, because I'll tell you right now, this guy, that's why I'm giving the example. I actually think the biggest problem pro players have in Counter-Strike is they worship not just skill, they worship players who are aggressive with their skill and who have aim and sort of like bully you. Because to them, it's like a machismo, you know. It's like, oh, that's why every top player, if you don't know, guys, every top player's favorite team was Virtus Pro. For that reason alone, because everyone thought they played like real men and they fucking, you know, went in there, and even if they were losing, they'd fucking like fight tooth and nail and they'd try some ballsy play and they'd take on some crazy aim duel. But I have to say, before the TSM team, and especially Device, before they were winning often, Maniac, there were loads of top pros that I won't mention, who when I would talk to them privately, were like, nah, that Device is fucking overrated. All he's doing is eco fucking hunting to get his stats up, or, you know, he just saves the AWP every time instead of going for the 1v2. Or even TSM as a team, they'd be like, they're just chokers, they'll never win. Like, was there ever a sense like that in your teams? Did people, I mean, you had Kenny S, he's like the opposite of Device. Did people ever think Device was overrated or anything like that?
I think... Funny enough, in 2013, 2014, I think the top Danes were sometimes labeled as onliner a little bit.
Sure, they used to be mega online, yeah, of course.
You have to imagine as well, at the time, there was a very serious amount of Counter-Strike being played online, even though LAN events were happening. Yes. There were leagues that were very important. There were qualifiers for very important events that were online. So it's not like you could just bypass online sys completely and just play online. That wasn't happening. And in that scenario, Danes were absolutely impossible to play against. Like the whole bunch, like the Dupree, the Device, they were very in your face. There was snowbally Counter-Strike being played as well. It was horrible to play against them. So I think it was more about, hey, can you do everything you're doing online than when you go to LAN and you get to a stage? There was maybe for a while the question. Personally, I always thought that Device was an incredibly clever player. Now, was he immediately capable of doing the incredible stuff he was doing online then, 2014, 2015? Maybe not. Maybe it took a while. Yeah, that's granted. Not that I would immediately feel it first degree when I was playing against him. Device for me was, he was always very close to a Guardian-esque type Counter-Strike where I cannot catch him making a mistake. And this was something that was infuriating as a player, where you're trying to checkmate someone in the position they get in, and suddenly, no, he's like, he's one step ahead. He's already rotated. He's already changed his position. He's already in a different place. And he's had, I mean, again, like on LAN as well, I can't remember some of the key finals where he choked, because the joke is I was playing at the time. So I wasn't exactly paying the same kind of attention to what was happening from the outside, you know? But in my eyes, I feel like he was, you were walking into his line of sight, you were dead. Like, it was just -1, changing of position, -1, changing of position, -1. It's like, holy fuck. And then it got even worse in the Astralis days, like to 2018 you're talking about, because then they had a whole system that was just optimized. So it was basically just a meat grinder of, well, I guess I'll just lose, right? Because anywhere I'm trying to take a risk, boom, they've read us, Device is in the right position. He finds me. He's never going to give away the 5v4, which, to be fair, he never did. Like, he would never be the player giving a 5v4 away. So, I don't know. Like, personally, I did not live, or I did not analyze the period where he was labeled a choker. I was playing against him at the time. And yeah, sure, I've been I beat them. I think we beat them. We beat TSM in like one of the pro league seasons, like season two or season three or whatever at the very beginning. So it's not like they were impossible to beat in 2014-15. But then in 18, like, what are you supposed to say? Like, he was, I don't know. I think people used the argument that the system was good in order to undermine what he was doing individually, yes. Which I still think was incredible he was doing. He just never, like all of the things that we talked about at the very beginning of this episode about Zaiwu and Simple, how they were supposed to like break through to what's happening in a team, because in order to win, they need to do that. The joke is Device didn't need to do that.
No.
Device was maxing out everything he needed to do in the environment he was in order to win. And guess what, motherfuckers, he won four majors. So... Is there really something else we would like to see from him? No, he had a role that he needed to fulfill, and he was fulfilling it, and they were winning, and so everybody's winning. I think that's one of the reasons why he might still be underrated as a player individually, because who knows what he would have done if he was in a different team where he had more freedom and he had to be a bit crazy individually. The unfortunate side of this story is that when he went to NIP, things went to shit, so we couldn't really explore this branch. Like, it just went to shit. So there's no blueprint, there's no receipt to really show what was happening there. But no, personally, always very, very high on the hype Device train, that's for sure.
Because the reason I bring this up is obviously I'm trying to theory craft why other pros wouldn't value this guy. Because I'll just throw this out there. It's one thing for pros not to admit. The fans that are turning on this guy now, you are just frauds. You're actually two-faced. Because you all tell me every year that I'm the noob who doesn't understand Counter-Strike because I don't agree with every HLTV top 20. This motherfucker was in four in a row. That, by your own logic, if you believe in the HLTV stats, guys, this was one of the top 20 players 4 years in a row. You do know that makes him one of the best players of this era, by definition. Like, you think how... Maniac, think how few people get to be, like, top fucking 20. And he wasn't even in the best teams, mate. He wasn't on, like, the teams winning all the lands. He just, every year, no matter what team, on Complexity, on the Glaive Astralis, fucking every version of the squad, think of all those dodgy players Astralis had throughout the time he came to this squad. It didn't matter who they put in the lineup, he just fragged. Yeah. So I'll give you another reason why. In the same way as when a player is the aggressive one, but he's only done it online, think of a Zantares, right? Everyone hates to play against someone like that because, like, nah, he wouldn't do this to me on LAN. So then you go, oh, it's just fluky. If you're the guy who's the beta and you beat the person, what they do then is that's frustrating to play against too. Then it's like, nah, he only got that kill because he baited me off this guy here and traded me. Or like, oh, I just fucking played this, like, whack off angle. Wouldn't have said whack back in the day. Whack off angle. And that's just lame the way he's playing. And it's like, it isn't. It's a different style of Counter-Strike. It's why I asked the Device question. Because I actually think Device is like the best defensive player ever in Counter-Strike. Mm-hmm. Like, people like Simple, they're going fucking all offense. I agree with you. I think Device walked the line of like how to be a star, but also fit in the system better than anyone ever. Like, it's true, he had an amazing squad, but I think he's one of the main reasons that was an amazing squad. I flipped the dynamic on that one.
Yeah,
and if you want to run back history, here's the difference. I think you could run back history with a different player in some of the other roles. I don't think you can replace Device, mate. It's not just the Danish angle. There's no one else could do it. Like, not in the same way he did. So what I would also say as well is that, like, I just feel like pro players have the weirdest ways of, like, deciding who's good. Like, it's a bit like, I'll give you the obvious social example that this happens with. North American CS is probably the worst scene ever for people when they get to the level where you finally can scrim against, like, Team Liquid and Call. They just all talk mad shit in all the scrims in World say, right? And then what happens is they think, like, ha, I'm proving I'm good. And it's like, no, all those players now hate you, not irrationally, totally rationally, to the extent that you have to literally be, like, twice as good as them before they want to recruit you. Because otherwise, their brain tells them, I want to diminish this motherfucker. He's annoying me right now. He's only just got here now. He's had one scrim against me and he's chatting shit. Like, you know what? This is why people like Smooya, by the way, have had a very hard career. It's nothing to do with your skills. Your skills would have already gotten you the gig. Your mouth talked you out of it. Because I'll give you the other example for me. Here's another one where everyone in history is a fucking genius, but right now they're not a genius, Maniac. It's Magisk. Because I'll tell you what, bro, when he was out of North and he was in that Optic team, there was no one in the world saying this guy should be in Astralis. Everyone was done with him. Because if you remember, also a bit of a passive player, right? Yeah, not a super aggro player. Then think now. Everyone's telling you now he's trashing Falcons. They should just kick off the squad. But the joke is, when he's winning in Astralis, when he's winning in Vita, everyone, oh, great player. Oh, it's so underrated. It's like, you guys can't see it because when he's not on those teams, you think he's just a bomb. So to me, unfortunately, I think any player that has like a baity style, I think that essentially, unless you're really good friends with pros, they're going to hate your guts. In the same way as on the other end, they can hate the Stewie 2K who's too aggro and, you know, doing all crazy moves. They hate that too because they feel like they're being cheated in some fucked up way, Pros are so weird. You know this maniac. Like, even that shit talk angle is a real thing. It can actually put people off just playing with somebody if he's mega, right?
No, I know. I think sometimes it is pretty hard to like remain objective on like the same. If we're talking about Blame, I mean, there are moments, and there were multiple moments where I was watching him play and I was thinking, holy shit, if you would have just risked that duel, this was the only way for you to win the round. So like, again, I do agree with you, and I think socially speaking, like the baiting style has a very negative sort of approach and scent to it. It's just a fact. But I also think that it shouldn't discourage us from like being critical of when it's overly done. And I think Blamef probably burned himself a couple times in his career doing that and then receiving that moniker. So hopefully he fixes that. But yeah, look, I don't think we as people are not really good at taking a distance, like a grain of salt, to any kind of situation that we're looking at, right? When we see a player that's in a roster and things are going bad and he consequently or as part of this roster is playing bad, then not a lot of people just go, oh, but wait a minute, he was actually pretty good in that roster in six, like a year ago, and so technically maybe something else happening. No, it's generally pretty surface level analysis. And I think that is also happening in pretty much all of the sports that I've ever watched. Like I've watched football, I love football, I've watched tennis. It's the same. Like we do in general pretty like surface level analysis, very short term. So that's why I guess shows like these, Counterpoint, for example, is important to actually reflect on whatever the hell is going on in a team that isn't winning and whatever doesn't exactly meet the eye immediately. And the people that are interested in that then are the people that are going to watch this episode and like try and interact with us as well. And some other people would just say, ah, fuck Bajis, kick him out. It's like, well, I cannot force you to look back and have like a deeper analysis of the situation. If that's what you want, if you're just consuming at first degree, yeah, I mean, I can watch Falcons play, I can watch them lose, I can watch Bajis have three kills on the second map against VP in Bedboom, and I can just say, nah, washed, kicked. Yeah, I guess. If you're just looking at face value, short term, sure. That can be your conclusion. That's just not the way I look at the game.
I'll tell you the obvious angle as well I would have liked for Blamef, along with what you're saying, is, mate, can this guy play with an all-time great coach, please? Because if you want him to develop in that way, mate, the difference is someone like a Zonic never would allow that play, mate. Like, he'd do that like four scrims and he'd call you, he'd have the one-on-one with you, or he'd show you an example of someone playing your spot who's not as skilled as you, and look how this worked when he played off his teammate here. Like, the difference is I could trust an all-time great coach because you have that impact. That's also a downside of the Fnatic angle. Like, the Keita guys might be all right. Who the fuck knows? Just a guy who's been around the scene a while.
It's what about Blamef and Blade? Could you imagine that?
That would be an interesting one. I mean, if people don't know, I actually do think Blade and Zonic are two of the only coaches who actually have not just the status, but the real like knowledge to be teachers of the game. I actually think, like I said on the Xtaz one earlier, I actually don't think really that Xtaz is supposed to do that. I think he was given like what's like a pretty good team of players, a bit disparate, but you know, the idea is if you make them work in the right way, you can win. It's not like, I think it was the flaw, like I said earlier, of just recruiting too many inexperienced players. Like, you could have done one less, and I think you'd be fine. I think that balance is, that's very hard to make up. You have to just have the experience. But the difference is, people like Zonic and Blade, they have just shown in history that they will disagree with a player and they'll get the player to agree with them. There's a great quote, actually, from a legendary British soccer coach. He was a guy called Brian Clough, right? Where he had an amazing quote where he said something like, you know, if one of our players disagrees with me, I talk to him for 20 minutes about what he disagrees about, and then we agree that I'm right. And like, essentially, that might sound mad, but that sort of is, if you're like an all-time great coach, what you're doing. Because essentially, a coach of their status isn't just there like, well, if I lose this next tournament, I'm fired and they'll bring the other guy in. Like, I'm there to build this squad, mate. Like, this is my team. Like, if I'm Blade, I'm sorry, I don't care who you were, Imma and Jill. You're here to play my brand of CS. Like, first of all, my brand of CS is one, you haven't. And then secondly, I've done it multiple times, so you have to listen to me. The difference is, though, the other coaches in the scene, a lot of them are just analysts, or they are like the ones where it's like, even in the huddle, you can just see they're the sixth guy, if you know what I mean. Like, they're like trying to get in there, if you know, like, that kills you when I see that. I want the guy where, it's why I told you, I took such a different perspective on that Boros fucking clip from that documentary, mate. Part of me saw like real leadership there. Like, I actually thought it was very brave by Zonic, the way he was like addressing him in that way. Cause that was like that was an incredibly manly way to hold someone accountable. Even though people made it like he was just bullying him, I don't think he was. Like, I think he went out of his way to do like compliment sandwiches, to like reference things that could be changed, that could be improved, like, it's not even over. Like, to me, that wasn't bullying at all. I understand that, like, it's a bad look for it to come out publicly, but I think that's where people miss that, like, some of the top coaches, you don't want them to be the best friend of the player. I think sometimes you need a distance.
Yeah, yeah. No, for sure. I mean, on the Falcons topic, it's not really something that interests me too much, but I do think that the medium through which it was presented then, I think, is why people got a little bit outraged by it. But if it had been like an actual one-to-one close conversation, then yeah, I think some degree of direct speaking while remaining respectful gets you much further away or much further down the road than just trying to sugarcoat everything you're saying, like 100%. Also on the blame F angle, since now we're talking about coaches and their ability to sort of imprint their vision, I think if blame F is to have more years ahead of him at the very, very top level, then he needs to have swallowed the humble pill from this Astralis time. There needs to be some degree of humility from what happened in Astralis and like the lack of success that he had when he was put in charge and it was his play style that was going through and he was getting the roles he wanted, which very obviously did not amount to a success of any kind. So now I was never in a position of being so mechanically skilled at the game as he is, or such an expert in an area of the game as he is. That's his sort of success to hold on to. But surely he must realize that, hey, however I've looked at the game in the last few years, that hasn't allowed me to use my level to reach the success that I wanted to. So maybe there's a different way to look at it. Maybe I need to be more open-minded to this. Or maybe I should be more open to compromise. The Counter-Strike that I as a player wanted to play hasn't worked out. Hasn't worked out on a leadership position. My team hasn't won. I haven't fragged out. So in that sense, maybe this could be very healthy, this little bounce back in Fnatic, where you actually get to think, okay, how did I end up here? Like, what happened?